So, just to repeat the title of this evening's talk, and we already explored it a little bit with our sit. Living with Uncertainty, the Promise and Potential of the Truth of Anicca, translated out of the Pali as change or impermanence, or uncertainty. And since we're all living in such a obvious, it's always here, but we're living in a more obvious time of uncertainty right now, this seemed to be the topic to explore with you this evening. And beginning with some words from the Buddha. So you should view this fleeting world, a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a phantom in a dream. And from Crowfoot, who was a leader of the Blackfoot Native American tribe in the early 1900s. And these are words from him. What is life? It's the flash of a firefly in night. It's the breath of buffalo in wintertime. It's the little shadow that runs across the grass and loses itself in the sunset. And some words from the physicist, astronomer, and writer Adam Frank, who quite recently said this. From birth to the unknown moment of our passing, we ride a river of change. And yet, in spite of all of the evidence to the contrary, we exhaust ourselves in an endless search for solidity. We hunger for something that lasts, some idea or principle that rises above time and change. We hunger for certainty. That's a big problem, he said. And then he says, it might even be the problem. The deep knowing and living with change, with impermanence, with anicca, with uncertainty is an entryway. It's a gateway to the liberation of the heart and mind, the freeing of the heart and the mind. The only thing that we can really, really, truly know for sure is the constancy of change. It's the most basic fact of our existence. Nothing lasts, nothing stays the same. So paradoxically, the only thing that we can hold on to is the realization, the intuitive insight of impermanence. I think that one of the most prevalent myths that we live with, and often quite unconsciously, is the myth that we can control this changing experience we call life. The Buddha talked about how powerful and how consequential it is to experience just one moment fully absorbed in the feeling of metta. And then he said that even more powerful and more fruitful than this is when there's one moment of really clearly seeing the rapidity of the arising and the passing away of phenomena. The stage of it in our practice where one really clearly and surely knows the momentariness of all appearances. The very powerful direct experience and the deep knowing of impermanence. The seed of liberation, the seed of freedom, lies in this clarity of seeing and knowing. And some more words from the Buddha. What is born will die. What has been gathered will be dispersed. What has been accumulated will be exhausted. What has been built up will collapse. And what has been high will be brought low. All conditioned things are transitory. Those who realize this are freed from sorrow. This is the path to freedom. I mean, consider it. Everything in this world, everything in this universe begins and ends, is born and dies, is constantly changing form. every form of life, every object, every relationship, every sensation, every thought, every feeling, every mind state, every perception, every experience, and every breath. The world of form outside and the world of form within. None of it is static. I think for almost all of us, this word form implies a solidity. But I mean, in reality, all forms are forming and unforming. They're coming together and coming apart constantly and without end. So we could say that our world really can't be solidly objectified. Our world, internally and externally, it isn't a noun, it's a verb. It's constant, incessant activity. And most of the time, I think most all of us only know this as an abstraction, as a concept. And I think actually more often we forget it, or we ignore it, or we're constantly distracting ourselves from it by accumulating, by planning, by living in and out of memories, by fantasizing, hoping, expecting, coveting, fearing. If we tightly hold on to how we want the future to be, or even how you want your next sitting meditation to be, all of our energy gets used up in these thoughts. And then it's inevitable that we come to have to face disappointment, or maybe anger, or judgment, or sadness, or grief. And what have we done? We've missed the fullness of the present moment. We've missed what Thich Nhat Hanh calls our appointment with life. And we're reinforcing, we're perpetuating the delusion. We're perpetuating a false sense of control and permanence. So looking at all of this, actually much of the time, we're practicing permanence. We're practicing as though everything's certain, stable, solid. I think a lot of the time, many of us want everything to stay as it is, or to continue as we know it. And I think that's happening a lot right now. We want things to become the way we want them to be. I think so much so that many of us believe that we have control, that things will do what we want them to do. But this belief is really only make-believe. It's kind of a made-up belief. So how might we move then into a deeper exploration and a deeper acceptance of the changing nature of things? Really, it's about our nature as nature. There are many, many, many doors for us in our practice, many, many doors in our life. The Buddha said there were 84,000 Dharma doors. That's a lot. So one that we're in the midst of right now, and actually we're always in the midst of it, the Dharma door of the mirror, or the mirror of the Dharma door of the changing seasons around us. And of course, the changing seasons within us. Many, many years ago now, during a three-month retreat that I was sitting at the Insight Meditation Society, I was taking a slow walk through the forest out back behind the center. And it was during the height of autumn color in New England. I was seeing the ground literally carpeted with rich reds and various shades of brown and clear yellows and shimmering golds and greens. It was really, really beautiful. I was quite immersed in this experience. And then all of a sudden, a knowing came in. It wasn't through thought, but it was a deep intuitive sense that this beauty that I was in the midst of, this beauty that I was observing, is death. The world is dying in its unbearable beauty in this moment. Well, I cried. And I cried off and on for a couple of days. quite deeply at times. I was grieving the loss of the world in a certain way. I was feeling my heart breaking, and at the same time, there was a sense of elation. And though it was still on a conceptual level to some degree, it was a big opening, an opening and a great release. Soon after this experience, a friend, a Buddhist nun friend, gave me this haiku. When with breaking heart, I realized the world is only a dream, the oak tree looks radiant. This constant cycling and circling, the universal movement of life, daily from light to dark, dark to light, rainstorm to sunshine, to cloud cover, all the changing sensations of our body, the movement and the changing sensations of the breath that we explored in our sit this evening. Times of connecting closely in person with friends and family. Times of more isolation, like right now. A quieter life. Maybe also a more contemplative life. As we look more closely at our own process through our practice, we might actually begin to see that we've been living under what I like to call an assumed identity. And what does this mean? The assumed solidity of our body and our thoughts, often quickly followed along by clinging on to the thoughts and the feelings and the various emotional states, all of the habitual fixations, we could call them, that we live with and believe and we call our own. We call them me, mine, and think this is who we are. As we practice and our practice goes deeper, we begin to experience and sense and see more directly and clearly and more often that things, the phenomena of our life, really aren't necessarily as they appear, or at least as they've appeared up until now. We begin to experience the whole thing, or at least parts of it, as process happening. Changing sensations, changing feelings, various changing manifestation of the myriad formations of our body and our mind. Each, of course, with particular qualities and flavors and textures. All these also constantly changing in themselves on both a gross and very subtle levels. And so our relationship to all of the forms, both the inner and outer forms, this begins to change. What might be a kind of compulsive, addictive grasping, trying to hold on to the passing show, it begins to loosen its strong attraction. Trying to control what's actually uncontrollable, what's actually ungovernable, this ongoing miracle, we could say, of constant change we call life, this begins to soften as we open our heart and open our hands, open our heart and mind. There's a Tibetan teaching that I've always really liked. It says, all thoughts, good, bad, happy, sad, vanish into emptiness as the imprint of a bird in the sky. There's a story that I was told was true. It's about a particular physicist who had done a great deal of research on matter and all of its components. And breaking it all down, that was his work. The scientist, breaking it all down and finding nothing substantial. Nothing at all substantial. And it's sad about this scientist that at that point he kind of went a little crazy, and that he started wearing these huge padded slippers all the time, just in case he fell through the floor. In reality, the very essence of life is change. So why do we fear? Why do we resist this perfectly natural phenomena, change, the beginnings and the endings, the births and the deaths? Why can't we surrender to the truth of uncertainty, the uncertainty of the moment? Why do we resist and fear so much of life? Without anicca, without change, there actually wouldn't be any life. Some words from Thich Nhat Hanh. If there's no impermanence, the grain of corn will remain a grain of corn forever, and you will never have a grain of, you will never have an ear of corn to eat. Impermanence is crucial to the life of everything. Instead of complaining about impermanence, we might say, long live impermanence. Thanks to impermanence, everything is possible. Looking at anicca, impermanence, change, from this perspective, we could say that actually it's an amazing natural marvel. The universal movement and the of the constant change and cycling of all of the life on the planet, and the possibility even of immediate presence with the potential joys in this changing process. Not getting caught up and not getting lost and sinking in various hopes and fears and attachments and regrets. These things come up for sure, but not getting lost and caught up in them. So we might consider that all of the life on the planet is changing and dying, we could say, all of the time, in similar volume as, for instance, the new life that brings beauty and joy and delight to us each spring, right now, and the new day or the new life that greets us every single morning when we wake up. And some words from William Blake. She who binds herself to a joy does the winged life destroy. But she who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. As our intuitive understanding deepens through our diligent practice, we do begin to see how excruciating it is to grasp on tightly, cling on tightly to this changing nature of life. The fear that's underneath this impetus to control, the fear of being in and with life as it is, begins to relax, open, and weaken. The fear actually begins to fade as we begin to surrender more and more deeply to the truth of the moment. By moment, by moment, by moment. So now we're practicing impermanence, anicca. We're opening the heart and mind to the nature of things, the way it is. In a poem by a woman who's not with us anymore, Denise Levertov, some of you may know of her. She was a writer. In this poem, she called this poem Living. The fire in leaf and grass, so green, It seems each summer the last summer. The wind blowing, the leaves shivering in the sun, each day the last day. A red salamander, so cold and so easy to catch, dreamily moves his delicate feet and long tail. I hold my hand open for him to go. Each minute, the last minute. The acceptance of change, the acceptance of the forming and the unforming, the acceptance of the birth and the death, is really, really, truly the acceptance of life, the acceptance of the nature of life. Every aspect of who we think we are just keeps changing. And maybe you noticed this evening, paying attention the way I asked you to be mindful this evening in our sit. Every aspect of who we think we are just keeps changing, including what we think we want, what we think we need. Our desires, for instance, that seem so clear and so strong and so right at any given moment, these too can change very rapidly, as I'm sure you've noticed at times. As we learn to pay closer and closer attention, mindful attention, we see that, in fact, pleasant experience sometimes changes into unpleasant experience. Unpleasant experience sometimes changes into pleasant experience. And we also begin to see that pleasant and unpleasant can often very quickly move into likes and dislikes. And then can rapidly move into seeming needs or very strong rejections. We see that we're momentarily, relatively happy. We're momentarily, relatively unhappy. All of this is relative conditioned states of mind. All of it is totally dependent on a whole set of conditions, which themselves are also changing moment to moment to moment. One of the most important and fruitful aspects of our practice is that as we learn to receive experience with more clarity and more ease, we begin to see ourselves as well as others with less and less judgment. We might begin to see that we are, to whatever degree, still acting out of, and certainly have in the past, acted out of ignorance and forgetfulness, acted out, or more accurately, reacted out of all kinds of old conditioned habituated places of suffering, many, many times ourselves. And so we change. We begin to meet ourselves as well as meeting others with more and more open-hearted clarity and more compassion. The 13th century Dogen, or Zen master Dogen, spoke about Buddha nature and its relationship to impermanence, and this is what he said. We do not just have Buddha nature, we are Buddha nature. When things are seen in their fleetingness and ephemerality, their impermanence, not only is understanding, great wisdom born, but also the other pillar of deepest insight, great compassion, impartial care, love That may even include one's enemy or difficult person. The Buddha said that living a single moment, seeing the impermanence of all conditioned things, is more valuable than living 100 years without seeing it. Clear and sure insight into anicca leads us towards the end of confusion and anguish, and towards the understanding of the root cause of suffering. Very surely knowing the momentariness of all appearances opens the door of insight into the conditional, impersonal, and sometimes the word is empty, the word empty is used, the conditional, impersonal, or empty nature of all things, of all phenomena. As our understanding of change, our understanding of impermanence, our understanding of uncertainty, as it deepens, and it deepens when we continue with our practice, our deepening practice, in clearly recognizing change, impermanence. And as that develops, it actually begins to bring a great relief and a lightness into our life. We no longer need to haul around such a heavy load. There's the time and there's the energy available to live to our heart's content. And some more words from Zen Master Dogen. Everyday life is a noble life. The body that maintains this life is a noble body. Do not waste your life. Do not neglect your body. Respect the body and adore this life. So, coming to the close of the talk this evening, or maybe this afternoon or this morning, depending where you are, I'd like to offer a poem and describe a cartoon. The poet and the cartoonist, his name is Michael Lunig. He's an Australian poet and cartoonist. And with every poem that he's written, he draws a little cartoon. So I'm going to describe the cartoon that goes with this poem before I read the poem. It's a line drawing of a man standing. And in his left hand, he is holding a frying pan with his arm stretched out to the side. And in the frying pan is a big pile of black stuff with smoke billowing out of it. And he's got his head turned towards the frying pan, looking at it with his eyes very, very wide open, like in surprise, kind of, or shock, kind of look. And this is the poem that goes with that little line drawing. We give thanks for the invention of the handle. Without it, there would be many things we couldn't hold on to. As for the things we can't hold on to anyway, let us gracefully accept their ungraspable nature, and celebrate all things elusive, fleeting, and intangible. They mystify us and make us receptive to truth and beauty. We celebrate and give thanks. So, what would it feel like to experience yourself free of limiting beliefs and strongly attached and identified and clinging very tightly to worldly concerns? Just ponder that for a moment. What would it feel like to experience yourself free of limiting beliefs and strong attachments and strong identities and clinging to the very tightly to the worldly, to various worldly concerns? Without the constant craving and reactivity that keeps us suffering and keeps us from ever, never, ever reaching the unattainable satisfaction we've all been conditioned to seek. Might we actually be able to experience a reality of peace? A reality of peace that's full of vitality and full of love. I think we can do it. That's why we practice. So let's sit silently just for a moment or two. And thank you for listening to the Dhamma, and thank you for your practice.